You can subscribe to The Spectator for 12 weeks for only £12 for our print and online editions, plus get 6 months of digital access free to The Telegraph. Go to spectator.co.uk/telegraph.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Cindy Yu and I'm joined by James Forsyth and John Connolly, our news editor. Now, we thought that the Northern MPs maybe have gone a little bit quiet over the last few days, but today they came back with a fury. John, you've written about what's happened in the latest, in the spat between regional MPs and Downing Street. Can you tell us about what's happened today?
Yeah, of course. So, as you say, it's just Boris Johnson had a few weeks off from sort of the North rebelling against him. And then today, last night, around 40-plus Tory MPs wrote to their Prime Minister saying that they were worried that the levelling up agenda, which he unveiled last year as part of his, in the sort of post-election to sort of level up the North, has been sidelined because of the COVID pandemic. And it's sort of part of a general nervousness amongst Tory Northern MPs that they're going to be sidelined and that the sort of overwhelming costs of COVID and the economic costs of it are going to mean that levelling up agenda isn't kind of feasible.
And James, in this letter sent by the Northern MPs, there are over 50 MPs and a lot of them are new 2019 intake. Is that significant that these new MPs are already rebelling?
Yeah, they're not already rebelling. They're not voting against the government. But their willingness to put their heads above the parapet to join a group, and a group that is... This letter doesn't exactly say the government's doing a wonderful job, please keep on doing a wonderful job. It's more making a kind of pointed thing saying, don't let levelling up and the infrastructure spending be a victim of the pandemic. And I think this does illustrate a tension, which is that the state has done more because of COVID than I think anyone would expect it to. You know, paid 80% of people's wages in the original furlough scheme, now a slightly less generous scheme, still paying a large amount of a lot of millions of workers' wages. And I think the free school meals route demonstrates this too. You know, once the state starts doing something, taking that away becomes more politically problematic. But I mean, most people think that the economy is going to be smaller as a result of COVID. So then the question becomes kind of, what can you spend the money on? I personally think the capital bits of levelling up are probably fairly safe. I mean, the markets will be very happy to borrow to fund, you know, infrastructure spending. So, you know, Northern Powerhouse Rail, all those kind of things. I think that stuff is relatively safe. I think it is probably the day-to-day budget which is going to face more pressure. But I think this interesting thing about this letter is their willingness to go public with their discontent. And also, I think it reflects something, which is, I mean, there's a huge amount of anger from Northern Tory MPs at that Jerome Mayhew letter. Do you remember this? He wrote, a Tory backbench, new backbench MP, wrote a letter to Andy Burnham, signed by some Southern colleagues, essentially saying, in our parts of the country, there isn't very much COVID. So, Mr. Burnham, so we can avoid a national lockdown, please be quiet and accept tier-free restrictions. That went down like a cup of cold sick with Northern Tory MPs, and they were very angry that Number 10 in the Whip's office had known about this letter and hadn't stepped in and said, this is a disastrous idea, please drop it. And I think what you see here is their willingness to speak out. You know, and I think this is one of the consequences, though, if the virus in this second iteration, it is being more, the spread of the virus appears to be more regional, right? We are still in a situation where Cornwall and Norfolk don't appear to be particularly affected by this, yet the cases are troublesome and problematic in the northwest. I think what that means is that you're going to get a far more, the regional issues, and especially regional inequality, is going to become more of a question now, because the government is, you know, the particular challenge for the government is that, you know, the areas of a country that are most badly hit right now by COVID are the precise areas of a country that the government was promising to level up.
John, you spoke to Jake Berry, the head of the Northern Research Group, last week for an interview for Coffee House. What did he say to you, and did you feel like this erstwhile ally of Boris Johnson, you know, what's his plan here?
Well, that's one of the funny things about this sort of mini rebellion so far, is that Jake Berry is quite a good friend of Boris Johnson and they've been allies in Parliament for a long time. And so I think it's quite interesting when I spoke to him and when he was sort of appearing on the Today programme this morning, he was really keen to stress that, you know, we want to work with the Prime Minister on the levelling up agenda. We want to help him revitalise it. And I think he honestly believes that Boris Johnson had a compelling vision for the North and it's more about making sure that it's implemented now. But as he told sort of Spectator TV a couple of weeks ago, I think he was very keen to point out the fact that, you know, the 80-plus sort of Tory MPs based in the Midlands and the North, they are the Prime Minister's majority. And so he's sort of, I think the group has twigged that the best way to convince Boris Johnson now to keep on that path is because those economic decisions now are much more difficult, and it's much harder to justify, to say, a restaurant that's been closed down in the south, that the north is deserving of more money in some way, that the economic argument is a bit more tricky to make to the country. Therefore, this group is going to make sort of push on the parliamentary and electoral side. So we've got 40 MPs here writing to the prime minister, you know, that's half of his majority in a way. And so they will be saying to him, basically they'll be saying to Boris Johnson, yes, we're going to make your life difficult if you put this on the back burner.
And James, what about the Level Up agenda more widely? Is it still even viable in this age of the pandemic? And does he need to rethink it? Boris Johnson, in his conference speech, for example, didn't really take into account the pandemic and how that affected his ambitions.
Well, Levelling Up has never been particularly well defined. And I think there is a kind of question, which is, you know, I think some Tories think of Levelling Up in a kind of quite a ballsy kind of way, which is basically Levelling Up means shiny new hospitals and schools in the north, kind of visible statements of the government's confidence in the region. Other people make it what I think is a more compelling argument, which is Levelling Up is really about improving the levels of education and training and giving these places better infrastructure, you know, things that really have helped London and the South East. And I think that one of the difficult questions of the government is, you know, is Levelling Up in that fuller sense. That actually is a long-term project. You are within a five-year parliamentary term, especially one so disrupted by COVID, you're not really actually going to make much progress on that more substantial question of levelling up. I think there also is another thing here, which is about COVID, which is you could actually argue that in some ways the post-COVID world could be more amenable to levelling up. Because in a world where everyone has got used to, you know, distance working, Zoom, all those things, it's actually moving jobs out of London and South East to the North, where people may be coming for, you know, big team get-togethers once a month or something like that, is actually a more viable idea than it is before. And if you think about people working in the civil service, for example, a civil service salary in Doncaster goes a lot further than it does in Dalston. And so you could begin to get an argument that you should be moving some of the not obviously not just government, but, you know, in both the private and public sector, there is an opportunity for people to move to places where they can have a better quality of life, they could get more house for their buck, and you can argue saving money. Now, I personally have a slight scepticism of that, because I think that during this lockdown and during these kind of home working periods, everyone's lived off their fat reserves, and I think they're kind of trying to maintain a public bodies culture or corporate culture with people scattered to the four winds coming together occasionally for kind of meeting up. I'm sceptical as to how that can happen, but there's no doubt that if you could improve broadband and the like, there probably is more opportunity, not just for people working for the public sector or big corporates, but, you know, entrepreneurial people starting their own businesses and the like, to be based there. And I think one of the big challenges for the North is kind of reversing the brain drain, right? You know, if you look at what some of the places that have had particular economic success in the North in recent years, it is because they've got a good university and they've managed to, A, the businesses that spin off from the IP there, they've also managed to keep, you know, Leeds is a classic example, they managed to keep a large number of their graduates there, who are often local, and that has been a boost.
And James, finally, one of the interesting things, I guess, we saw at the beginning of the pandemic was how much more the coronavirus affected BAME people. Now, a new report commissioned by Dame Doreen Lawrence today found that actually it's much more about where these people are working. So what she calls structural racism, i.e. that these BAME people working in retail, essential services, more front-facing things. Is that one big question about COVID solved then?
I think it is to an extent, but I think this was something a lot of people have thought for a while, which is that obviously there was a disproportionate effect on the BME population in the first wave. But as I think been pointed out at the time, given so many people from BME backgrounds, you know, are more likely than the general population to work in the NHS or to be key workers, you know, working in customer-facing roles, you therefore have more exposure to other people and therefore in some ways more exposure to the virus. I think that is the issue. I think the other point as well, which I think is that often isn't appreciated enough, is housing conditions are also a key. If you are living in crowded accommodation or multi-generational accommodation, that increases risk factors as well.
James and John, thanks very much. And you can subscribe to this podcast through all the usual routes. And thanks so much for all of you who have already filled out our podcast survey. But please do keep filling it out. It's at spectator.co.uk/podcast survey. And you'll be in for a chance to win a bottle of Paul Roger champagne. Thanks for listening and join us again tomorrow.